I'm Holly Starley, and this is We the Village, the show that believes that in believing in ourselves, we can accomplish anything. This is episode 5, Women on Water, Team Sistership. You know when you hear one of those stories that impresses upon you a realization that there are incredibly brave people out there taking on feats that require a dedication of mind and heart and body that you can't even wrap your mind around? And then, as you listen to their story and to the joy they receive and the gifts that come from overcoming, there's this inkling inside you that maybe, just maybe, you too could live one of those stories. Today is one of those. Let me set the stage. The challenge. A 750-mile boat race from Port Townsend, Washington to Ketchikan, Alaska in 2 stages. Here's the catch. The vessel must be 100% people or wind-powered. Read, no motor on board, not even as a backup, just in case. The team on the boat can have no external support. Read, the crew must rely on itself, not just for physically moving the vessel through the water, but for supplies, repairs, navigation, anything else that might come up. With hundreds of miles of ocean open, crossing shipping lanes traversed by massive freighters through remote lands home to grizzlies, killer whales, squalls, sudden violent winds, and tidal currents upwards of 20 miles per hour, things come up. Race to Alaska, aka R2AK, that's R as in race, the number 2, AK as in Alaska, is the first and currently the longest race of its kind. Under a section called This Isn't For Everyone, the R2AK website describes the race as, quote, like the Iditarod on a boat, with the chance of drowning, being run down by a freighter, or eaten by a grizzly bear. The site also notes that the race traverses the most beautiful scenery on Earth. Which brings us to the setting. After an initial 40-mile sprint from Port Townsend to Victoria, Canada, across open ocean, 2 sets of shipping lanes, and international borders, comes stage 2. The inside passage to Alaska has been traversed by native canoes for ages and ages, and during the Klondike Gold Rush, it was jammed full of steamboats teeming with prospectors. There are times when 25 to 30-foot whirlpools make boating impossible. The small native fishing villages are few and far between, and the area is so remote that boaters receive this warning.
The Canadian Coast Guard talked to us, and they basically said, you better be ready, because it's going to take us at least, 24 hours to get to you, if we can even get to you anywhere along this coast.
And now the racers. Team Sistership 2017. You just heard Captain Michelle Borowski. In a week from today, on June 8, 2017, Borowski and her 3 crewmates, Johanna Gabbard, Stephanie Scout Mayhew, and Stephanie York, will embark on the 750-mile journey. They're the second edition of the first all-women's R2AK team from Ventura, California. They're the first all-women's team, and they're from Ventura, California. Oh, and they're all over 50. Their chosen vessel, a 3,000-pound F-27 trimaran, that's a type of sailboat, with a small retractable centerboard, equipped with 2 sliding seat rowing stations with 16-foot sweep oars. For those times when you just can't find any wind. Today, you'll hear more from Michelle, and then you're going to meet Joanna and Scout. They talked to me about Team Sistership and what it is that you think when you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Sharks. No, I'm just kidding.
Really?
They talked about what can go wrong.
And so it's actually a vessel that can tip over. You're sailing along just find kind of almost bored, and then there's moments of sheer terror. And you have to, and things happen and things break and, you know, bad things happen.
And then they talked about helping each other through to the other side whenever one of them has one of those moments when they realize,
holy crap, like this is like a really, you know, like things can happen so quickly. And I really had, after that race, it took me a few days, and I had to, you know, I had to have a heart-to-heart with Michelle going, I don't know if I can do this. And she's like, you can. And I believe her, you know? She's like, you can.
That was Scout and then Michelle and then Scout again. Scout is referring to a gnarly practice race that we're going to talk a little bit more about later. When I caught up with the women of Sistership 2017, well, three of them anyways, they just finished a grueling 126-mile training race. That's the race Scout was referring to, from Newport, California to Ensenada, Mexico, with weather that tested both the team and their equipment and caused half of the boats that had started to quit the race. They had a really busy training schedule coming up, and we figured rather than try to schedule a sit down in the studio, why not just record right away? So we piled into the back of a parked car. It was the closest, quietest spot we could find. So that's why you might hear some traffic noise now and again in the background of that, those interviews. We talked to about the challenges that these women have faced as women of physical strength and power in a world that has traditionally valued more, I'm going to use air quotes very, very strongly with a lot of emphasis here, more quote-unquote feminine qualities. Team's Sistership has a message to women and girls, and it is one of empowerment.
Continue to step up. If you're doing something awesome, let the world know, you know, and you're, you know, don't wait for the world to come to you and notice you. You still have to step out. You still have to, you know, share your message with people.
And they also have a message on aging.
We've got to own up to the fact that we are aging, and we have to be proud of it. You can't hide from the fact.
That was Johanna. And of course, there are the gifts of surmounting such challenges. First up, Scott on the Serenity.
You know, I just enjoy being out in this amazing world, you know, and just reflecting on life. And sometimes I love to just be in the present. And, you know, I'm looking around and maybe I'll see a dolphin or, you know, other wildlife. And it's just so, it's so peaceful.
And then here's Johanna on the Serenity's counterpart, the excitement.
When you do something like that and you put yourself out, you challenge yourself, and there's nothing like feeling that alive.
I'm Holly Starley. This is We the Village. We're talking to Michelle Borowski, Johanna Gabbard, and Stephanie Scout Mayhew, three of four women about to embark on a 750-mile boat race in the remote oceans of Canada and Alaska.
Chapter 1, Row, 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 64 start, 26 finish.
For Michelle and Johanna, this will be the second race to Alaska. They were joined last year by Janice Mason and Sherry Smith as the first Sistership team, the first all-women team to not only enter but also complete the race, and finishing is not by any means a foregone conclusion. In this chapter, we're going to step back in time and take a look at R2AK 2016. Let's start with a little more detail on the race. First up, the only other rule besides no motor allowed on board, period, and there's no outside support allowed from anyone else but the crew itself. Here's Captain Michelle Borowski.
There's two places that you have to check in. The first one is called Seymour Narrows, which is halfway up the inside passage. It's about a quarter mile across with currents that get up to 16, 18 knots. And that's one of the most challenging parts of the race. You have to time that just right because you can't go through it with those kind of currents, even under full sail, because there's whirlpools that are about 25, 30 foot across, giant. Even the cruise ships don't go through during that time period. And then the next waypoint is called Bella Bella, which is up along the British Columbia coast. It's a Canadian Native American sort of fishing village, and you have to go through there. Other than that, your choices of navigation are all your own, and you just have to make your way to Ketchikan.
Wow.
It was right before the start of that race in 2016 that the Canadian Coast Guard gave it to the racers straight, if you will, about just how long it might take for a rescue to be launched and to get to any vessel that might find itself in trouble. Here's the Michelle again.
Most of the locations of this race are quite remote. After you get to the top of Vancouver Island, most of the coastline is only accessible by boats, and the villages are far and few between. Actually, last year's race, the pre-race, we had the Canadian Coast Guard talk to us, and they basically said, you better be ready because it's going to take us at least 24 hours to get to you, if we can even get to you anywhere along this coast. Yeah. They only have one big vessel and one plane, and the plane really can't help you out.
Wow.
Undeterred, the sister ship was off, along with 64 other boats at the start of stage one. The first few days of racing sounded a little bit like this. That is the sound of the sister ship rowing, which they did quite a lot of. Here's Michelle.
There were times where we rowed for, 12 hours at a time. We could row the vessel about 3 knots, and in that part of the world, the currents change every 6 hours, so you might have a current going with you, and you can row with it at 3 knots. But most of the currents are at least 3 knots, if not stronger. And so once the current changed direction, if we had no wind, we'd have to row close to some land and then anchor and wait for the tide to change. Or otherwise, we'd be swept backwards. It was just there was just not much wind at the start of the race. And so, we rowed a lot.
The four women in the 3,000-pound boat waited for wind. The sun beamed down on them, and when the currents were right, they took turns, one steering, one resting, and two on the sliding seat rowing stations, dipping their 16-foot sweep oars into the water. And then there was also a little bit of this.
Alaska, here we come. Row, row, row your boat. Alaska, here we come. We won't win. We got your boat. Alaska, here we come. We won't win. We got your boat. Alaska, here we come. We won't win. We got the sun. So diddly, diddly, dum. Row, row, row the sun. So Alaska, here we come. We wanted sun, we got the sun, so diddly diddly dum.
We wanted wind and we got the sun, so diddly diddly dum. That's a shanty song. Sister Ship wrote about this song that they sang. Quote, a sea shanty is a type of work song that was once commonly sung to accompany labor on board large merchant sailing vessels. The term shanty most accurately refers to a specific style of work song belonging to this historical repertoire. However, in recent popular usage, the scope of its definition is sometimes expanded to admit a wider range of repertoire and characteristics, or to refer to a maritime work song in general. Johan is a musician, and so while Team Sistership traversed, they sang. They might even come out with an album of shanty songs, which I'm very much looking forward to. You can find links to some of those songs and YouTube videos and lots of other stuff on our website, wethevillagestories.squarespace.com, or on Sistership's website, sistership.org. Last year, during the race, they sent out updates when they could, when they had cell coverage, and they sent a song to the RTAK website, and it nearly crashed because people were so excited to listen to it. At first, the women, as they rowed along, singing songs, and rowing and rowing and rowing, they would row for 45-minute stints, but the time periods dwindled, and at one point they were just rowing at 15-minute stints because their wrists and their butts became so absolutely sore. And then, finally,
look at here, we found some wind! Woohoo!
So the Sistership 2016 team tallied it up. All in all, they rowed for 70 hours, the remainder of their 11 days on the water when they were traversing. They sailed. Of the 64 boats that started, only 46 boats continued on from Victoria, and only 26 of those boats finished. Team Sistership placed 15th. Was the race for these women a message about what women can do? Absolutely.
We recognized how valuable this race was with over 13 million people watching this race. We had this huge audience, and we tried to use this opportunity to make a statement that women can do these type of things, and that's why we're doing it again this year, is to continue that message.
Johanna mentioned 13 million followers. The R2AK gets a lot of attention globally from enthusiasts of such races. And Sistership, as the first all-women's team, had a lot of watchers waiting on bated breath. Team Sistership used that attention as an opportunity. During their race, they raised $8,000 for scholarships for women and girls. I want to read a thank you note from one of the girls. This was on the Sistership website. I'm not sure the age of Amelia, but she wrote, quote, "Thank you very much for giving me a scholarship to an intensive sailing camp last summer. I loved the camp, and I love sailing so much." Amelia goes on to talk about the friendships she made and the places that they visited, and she says that she hopes to continue sailing.
Feel the shore against your feet. Feel the warm rocks under.
This is We the Village. We're talking about two 750-mile journeys from Port Townsend, Washington to Ketchikan, Alaska. One completed last year and one about to be embarked on, each made by four women over the age of 50. We just heard about the first journey and the women of Team Sistership 2016, who placed 15th in the race to Alaska, where 64 boats started and 26 finished. Up next, a brief look at the long journey that led to women being able to embark on such journeys. I'm Holly Starley. We're talking to Captain Michelle Borowski, Johanna Gabbard, and Stephanie Scout Mayhew. The three women, along with their fourth crew member, Stephanie York, will be embarking on a boat race that takes them through open ocean, across shipping routes, and through a remote passage to Alaska, lined with beautiful scenery and a few grizzly bears. Let's take a glimpse at some of the hurdles these women have crossed in their lives to get them to that start line on June 8.
Your sister ship, mighty sister ship, and our race is near the end of a journey that took a village just to show the world we can.
We are Chapter 2, Just to Show the World We Can, Muscles, Femininity, and Title IX. In our culture, women haven't always been able to do things like this race to Alaska. They haven't always been revered or celebrated for qualities such as strength and power and athletics. I think it's easy to forget just how far we've come in such a very short period of time.
I've been listening to a podcast called Where We Live. On May 18, the show re-aired an episode called From Motor Girls to Kalamazoo Gals, A Celebration of Women's History. It tells two stories of women who did what society and tradition said they couldn't, paving the way for women of today. John Thomas, professor of law at Quinnipiac University, wrote Kalamazoo Gals, the story of the extraordinary women, and a few men, who built Gibson World War II banner guitars. The story chronicles the women who built Gibson guitars while the men were away at war. A fascinating piece of the story is Gibson's reaction. Thomas untangled a very tangled web, but the long and the short of it is that the company seems to have attempted to deny that it made any guitars during the period when the men were away, and to a degree continues to do so this day. The company made it really hard for him to find out about this. Women and guitars. Only the guitars and the women certainly do exist. The second story is told by Sue Macy, author of Motor Girls, How Women Took the Will and Drove Boldly into the 20th Century. At the turn of the century, when cars first hit the dirt, there wasn't pavement back then, the majority thought women shouldn't drive. For one thing, driving was dirty. And the first gasoline cars required cranking, which took strength. Women weren't supposed to get dirty or be strong. And then there was this argument that women weren't emotionally able to deal with difficult situations that required quick decision-making. You know, things like intersections. Macy tells about the women who defied those societal norms and drove cars with abandon. One final piece of history I want to share comes from another podcast I love, The World According to Sound. The episodes are short, like 2 minutes, and it's a great way to tell a story. The show's 22nd episode is called The Hour of Charm. It was an all-women's orchestra during the 30s that performed at bases around the country. The idea was that the soldiers would find the music more charming because it was made entirely by women. But it wasn't just any women who could join. You had to be in your 20s, have long flowing hair, weigh less than 120 pounds, and if you wanted to date, you needed permission. We've come a long way since those days, but the struggle for equity isn't over. I went to a show last night called Anima, Theater of the Feminine Underground. 12 women told these poignantly beautiful stories of womanhood on stage. I was struck by a line in one, where a woman recalled being told by a man, when she asked what she could do for him, to look like a woman. What does that mean? She wondered. I asked the women of Sistership, an all-women's team about to embark on a 750-mile boat race to Alaska, about what they've faced, being women of strength and power and endurance, in a society that hasn't traditionally valued those qualities in women. Here's Michelle Borowski, captain of that team.
We're definitely not physically as strong as most men, but as far as the endurance part, I kind of disagree with that. I think women have a lot of endurance. We endure all kinds of stuff in our lives every day that men have no idea that don't go through. And just physical endurance, I think we are geared for physical endurance. If you read all survival stories, who survives? The women's or dies. who outlive their husbands, the women outlive their husbands. We are geared towards survival. We're geared towards raising kids and having kids, and we are geared to be the ground of the family and to survive. And I think that just transfers over into these kind of things. I tell you what, the boat that won last year, they did the race in just under 5 days. It took us 11 days. I don't know if those same guys on our boat in the time period, I don't know if they could have done what we did. Stayed out there for 11. So many boats quit. Some of those big racer boats, they're like, oh, we don't want to go through this. There's not enough wind. We're not going to paddle. They quit. We didn't quit. I don't know. I just think women do endure and have what it takes for these kind of things, for long distance sailing, long distance anything, going the road, you know.
Here is Johanna. She joined the team on the water last year at the last moment when, just 2 weeks before the start of the race, one of the women had to bow out for medical reasons. Johanna had been training as the alternate, but she hadn't learned the navigation system and wasn't planning on being out there. She and Michelle joked that perhaps when it came to the fear factor, ignorance was bliss. I'd say from listening that this is a woman who has learned to face her fears with grace. In today's world, views on women are changing slowly. We've come a long ways since the charming women of the orchestra. But Johanna, as I'm sure is true for many women, for many of you out there listening, remembers a time when things were different.
Well, I'd like to answer that question too, a little bit different take from Michelle, is that, you know, when you said something about women aren't traditionally known to be strong and so on and so forth, and you're absolutely right, you know, we're in our 50s, but I just remember I was super strong, super fit, you know,
in
my 20s and with muscles galore, but hiding that because it, you know, I didn't like being ostracized and being called names that I wasn't feminine enough, because back then there wasn't a place for or at least it wasn't a prominent place and for women like us. But we endured. We continued and we were true to ourselves. Title IX came through and helped us validate, you know, who we were. And now I look at women and young girls and they're proud to, you know, to be physical. They're proud to be on teams. And I say to them, you know, continue to step up. If you're doing something awesome, let the world know. And don't wait for the world to come to you and notice you. You still have to step out. You still have to, you know, share your message with people.
Johanna mentioned Title IX, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But here's Michelle on a similar experience.
I'm almost 60, and things have certainly changed in my lifetime. I was in high school when Title IX passed. I remember running track and being told by my mother that my legs were too muscular. You know, that's not feminine. You know, you shouldn't try so hard in track because your legs are becoming too muscular. So going from that kind of upbringing to now, Johanna has three nieces that are all Americans, as softball players. One's now a professional softball player in Japan. And watching them grow up and the positive reinforcement that they had, and it's just, you know, we're talking 30 years later, the amount that the place that we've come, to me, is just incredible. And we're just hoping to continue. I mean, part of why we wanted to do this race again this year, because we saw the following that we had last year in women in our age group that said, you go girls.
That's right, you go girls. Okay, so Title IX is part of the Education Amendments Act of 1972. And it's really a landmark federal law that prohibits sexual discrimination in education. It's a little tiny statute that just reads, quote, "No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance." So who does that apply to? That applies to any educational institutions, schools that are receiving federal financial assistance, which is most schools. What does that mean to comply? It means that the school or institution needs to provide participation opportunities for women and men that are, quote, substantially proportionate to their respective rates of enrollment of full-time undergraduate students. And I'm taking sort of paraphrasing, sort of quoting a little bit from the NCAA website. Schools also need to demonstrate a history and then continue to show that they are expanding programs for the underrepresented sex and to fully and effectively accommodate interests and abilities of the underrepresented sex. And female and male students, athletes have to receive scholarship dollars that are in proportionate amounts. There's this other cool website, it's called Know Your Nine, that tells a little bit more about how you can see if your institution is complying with Title IX, and if it's not, what to do about it. And it talks a little bit more to how that it's, even though it's that short little statute, that it's been used by Supreme Court decisions and guidance from the U.S. Department of Education along with that have made it, given it a really much broader scope where this is the act that protects students against sexual harassment and violence and guides how incidents of those sorts of occurrences need to be dealt with by school. In researching for this show, I found this article dated May 24th, 2017. It's called Remembering a Time Before Title IX, and it's at the Journal News, which is a part of USA Today Network. And it tells the story of this awesome woman, Betsy Evans, who was a former coach and athletic director. And she grew up in a time before Title IX, so while she herself certainly didn't enjoy the benefits that today's female athletes do, she was awesome in terms of helping her young girls and women receive the benefits that she had hoped for even before Title IX. And I mean, it's this really cool story about like her taking coaching jobs for just laughably low rates as in comparison to her male counterparts, and her going out of her way to make sure the girls that she was coaching had uniforms and rides to events. And I want to read to you just a little bit from this article, Remembering a Time Before Title IX. Quote, "Think Title IX's importance is overstated? On Saturday, Evans posed for photos alongside two other women who are among the millions who have benefited nationally from passage of that constitutional amendment that bars discrimination in education." End quote. Then it goes on to describe these two women, the achievements they had in athletics over the years. And I'm going to go back to the article. Quote, "Evans also was an excellent athlete. She graduated from Upstate Union Spring High School in 1963, 9 years before Title IX. For Evans, sports were restricted to intramurals until each sports, quote, play day arrived. Then all girls from all Cayuga County schools gathered and were divided into new teams for one day of play in that sport. Evans says it was a social occasion. You'd play one time each season. Competition was judged too tough for women. One play day per sport was her entire competitive season." End quote. Evans had a message for girls and women out there. Keep fighting. Keep standing up for your rights. She pointed out that just because you have something, a right now, doesn't mean that you'll have it in the future, and that there are still things that need changing. You've heard throughout this episode this notion of inspiration. For all of Team Sistership who we're talking with today, the four women who will be taking a 750-mile gnarly journey in just a week from today, for all of those team members, it was clear that this message Girls and women of all ages, you can do it, is an important part of why they're doing what they're doing. It's often the stories, the ones we're told or hear or witness, the ones that we tell in our own action and that we repeat to others, that inspire us to know that whatever it is we're told we're not supposed to be doing or isn't for us because of whatever categories we may be placed in, that we can do those things. We the Village wants to hear from you. What story inspired you? What was your story of inspiration where you went out and defied the odds and did something that you weren't maybe supposed to do? We would love to hear those stories, and we'll compile them and present them in a later episode. Go to our website, wethevillagestories.squarespace.com. Click on the Get Involved link and send us a message with the subject line, My Sistership Moment, or record a voice memo. Email us, wethevillagestories@gmail.com. Subject line, My Sistership Moment. You heard it at the top of this chapter. Here's Sistership 2016 singing on their boat.
Your sistership, mighty sistership, and our race is near the end of a journey that took a village just to show the world we can. We are mothers, we are sisters, we are young girls hand in hand. We are gathered, been inspired by this race to catch a can. We are sistership, mighty sistership, and our race is near the end of a journey that took a village just to show the world we can. Just to show the world we can.
I'm Holly Starley. This is We the Village. We're talking about women doing things they were once considered too delicate or demure or charming for. How things have changed and are changing and still need to be changing. And how we have to keep standing up and asking for our rights, for our equity. We've been talking today with Captain Michelle Borowski, Johanna Gabbard, and Stephanie Scout Mayhew. They're part of an all-women's team that will be racing from Port Townsend, Washington, to Ketchikan, Alaska, next week. Up next, we're going to hear about their preparations for the big race, including a harrowing training race that momentarily, and only momentarily, mind you, might have tested their nerves. Chapter 3, Moments of Sheer Terror, Lessons from Ensenada. On April 28th, the women of Sistership 2017 headed out to Newport, California, for a training race that would turn out to be, well, grueling is an understatement. I'm going to read a post on Sistership's Facebook page from the one member of the 2017 team not with us during this conversation. Stephanie York wrote, quote, "Man, we can't show you the videos of the middle of the night rolling in no wind with swells, or the first part of the race when we sweated through 20 plus knots of wind gusting to 25 while we learned to reef the sail. Not one reef, but then two reefs. Can't show the video of the cold that seeps into your bones because you've been soaked all night, sitting on a top of a trampoline of water spraying up at you 12 hours. can't show the video of the three of us huddled deep into the corner of the Port Ama while our captain bravely, aggressively, sails down waves that are just forming under the boat, the whole time praying the Ama doesn't submerge. The whole jib is in and the mainsail is reefed and you're still doing 10-plus knots. You are so cold you can't talk. Teeth chatter. Fingers don't unbend.
The National Weather Service issued a small craft advisory because of hazardous winds and sea conditions, in effect until 3 a.m. that Saturday.
For the other Stephanie Mayhew, her friends affectionately call her Scout, and we've been doing the same here, both because of the two Stephanies and differentiating between them, and because, well, I want to be her friend. For Scout, the 126-mile race from Newport, California to Ensenada, Mexico, was her first open ocean race. A couple of weeks later, when we met up, she was still recovering from it. They're no less determined to race to Alaska. Here's a Scout on that race.
I'll tell you, you know, I've been in some heavy wind, but nothing like Newport to Ensenada. And the last 5 hours of our journey in, or the race into port, it was late at night. We were all sleep deprived. We had taken down the jib. We had double reefed the main, meaning that we had hardly any sail up. And we were still cranking, and the waves were big. And we were all, you know, all three of us, Michelle was on the helm for 5 hours. God bless her. She saved us, I feel like. But at that moment, you know, I was like, holy crap. Like, this is like a really, you know, like things can happen so quickly. And I really had, after that race, it took me a few days and I had to, you know, I had to have a heart to heart with Michelle going, I don't know if I can do this. And she's like, you can. And I believe her, you know, she's like, you can, you know, we have things in place that are going to keep us safe. I'm going to keep us safe. You know, we all are going to be prepared, you know, to deal with heavy wind. So, boy, yeah, I was, I think I had PTSD for a few days after, because stuff can happen. A big gust comes up and you have a bunch of sail up. Boom, all of a sudden your boat's coming up, you're like, whoa, you know. And
here's Michelle, captain of the vessel, on what can and indeed did go wrong on open water and what experience tells her when she is captaining the boat.
Yeah, this is a trimaran with just a little small retractable centerboard, and so it's actually a vessel that can tip over, so you have to really be cognizant of that, and weight distribution is important on that. And I don't think at any time we were close to flipping, knowing the boat and having spent the time on the boat that I had, but I think some of the other crew during the Newport to Ensenada felt that.
And here is Michelle again.
Offshore sailing is pretty much like that. It's like you're sailing along just fine, kind of almost bored, and then there's moments of sheer terror, and you have to, and things happen and things break, and you know, bad things happen or things that you weren't intending to happen, and you have to know how to get out of those and fix those.
And then here's Michelle again with a little bit more detail of what they were up against during that particular training race.
It was super windy at the first, and we actually ended up ripping the entire part, one of our sails just ripped to shreds. Then we wallowed after the wind died, we wallowed for about 15 hours in a big swell, and then the wind picked up again, and we had our spinnaker sail up, and this before the wind picked up too much, and then all of a sudden the wind picked up a lot, and we were trying to get the sail down and then dropped it in the water, and then the halyard, which is the rope that holds the sail up, went to the top of the mast, so we lost that halyard, and you know, all kinds of stuff happened.
I don't know if you can hear it in her voice here, but Michelle was giving me a list of the things that made it a great race because of all the lessons it taught the team. She talked too about the team learning about having the right clothes As you heard earlier from Stephanie York's Facebook post, they were cold and wet. And they learned about getting enough sleep. They learned about sailing the particular vessel that they'll be on, which is weight dependent, and what that means and how to reef a sail when the winds are super dangerous. And she learned lessons for herself as a captain and how she can support the team. She ends up, at the end of that quote you just heard from, saying a lot of things happened and we learned how to deal with them. Another important lesson or detail that can't be ignored is that once again, they didn't quit. A lot of the boats that started the Newport to Ensenada race quit and motored back to San Diego when the conditions got rough and just decided they didn't want to deal with it. But Sister Ship did not quit. Here is the end of Stephanie York's Facebook post about that race. Quote, "You make it into a slip after midnight. Exhilaration sets in as the end of 36 hours of wet, wild, crazy, and dull is over. Warmth is somewhere beyond the dock. We made it. We did not quit. Something to behold. The other side of victory. We didn't win a trophy. We never quit and learned so much. This 126-mile race was training. No training a school would dare to teach you at this level. Yet we are all better, closer, and stronger. It's good to be a part of a team who all are trying their best. A rising tide lifts all boats. When one of us does better, we all do. This race, we all did better." End quote. I'm Holly Starley. This is We the Village. We're talking about preparedness and confidence and how going out there and defying the odds and doing what others, or maybe even yourself at some point, thought you couldn't do is something that brings you so much in return. We've been talking with Sister Ship 2017, Captain Michelle Borowski, crew members Johanna Gabbard and Stephanie Scout Mayhew. They are also going to be joined by their fourth crew member, Stephanie in New York, next week for their race to Alaska from Port Townsend up to Ketchikan, Alaska. Up next, the words that made me want to beg the Sister Ship to take me with them. Chapter 4, Hours of Serenity, Aging Proud, Growing Bold. The Big 5-0. For a lot of women, age 50 isn't what it is for the women of Sister Ship. For them, it's a magical number, a rite of passage. Scout, I believe it is on their website, wrote that she couldn't wait to blow out those candles so she could join this team of, if I may steal a phrase from Ani DiFranco, righteous babes. Here's crew member Johanna Gabbard on aging boldly.
You're absolutely right. And if you look at our shirts, I mean, our shirts say aging proud, growing bold. And I've met women that don't really like that word. Aging proud, and I'm like, we've got to own up to the fact that we are aging, and we have to be proud of it. You can't hide from the fact; otherwise, you're going to be treated like, older people have been treated unfairly throughout. Kind of disappear, go away, because the only thing we value here is youth and beauty. I'm like, be proud to age, and do it boldly, mm-hmm. And that's I love our motto. I want everybody to share that, and I want people to be proud of the fact that, hey, this is where you are in life. Be proud of it and own it,
And these women are certainly doing that. They're living their message. They're owning where they're at. And they're doing it together. There's this element that we didn't exactly talk about directly, per se, that's just really present and really clear when you talk to these women. And it's how deeply they trust and respect and admire each other, and I'm have no doubt that that is part of what makes their team such a success.
I have full confidence in every single crew member, and absolutely Michelle is a captain. Yeah.
Michelle's an amazing captain.
Yeah.
And it almost, I mean, I've been with Michelle for a long time, but never did I realize how amazing she was until you started comparing her to the people who are doing these type of races and realizing that she's one of the top.
Yeah.
As far as skill and just confidence and just overall experience, not just in racing per se, but in ocean water crossings and all the things that the ocean will throw at you. And so, yeah, we're lucky to have Michelle. Mm-hmm.
And it's clear that Michelle feels equally confident in her crew and pleased to have them along with her. In reflecting on a question of bravery and a friend who had asked her whether she was an adrenaline junkie, the answer is no. Michelle explains that the place from where her confidence in this race comes from, and she talks about how she admires her teammates for their bravery.
All the pieces of the puzzle that of my life that have taken me to this place have made me skilled enough to be able to do this. I think, if anything, the other crew members, such as Scout and Johanna and Stephanie, are far braver than I am for going into this race. Johanna's done it last year, but the other two, not knowing what's ahead, I think they're way braver than I am.
This idea of going forward without knowing what's ahead, isn't that kind of what life is? Isn't it what we all do? Hopefully with as much grace and dignity and bravery as we can muster. To close this story, let's hear from the women of Sistership 2017 about the gifts that stepping, or paddling as it were, out bravely into the great unknown bring to them. What it's like out there in the middle of the ocean, just four women and a trimaran. You're going to hear me and then Scout and Johanna and Michelle.
What's going through your minds, or maybe your hearts? Like, what are you feeling?
Sharks. No, just kidding.
Really? I would be.
No, I go into, you know, it depends on how, what the wind's doing at the time. You know, if it's just, you know, we're just cruising along for a while. I just enjoy being out in this amazing world, you know, and just reflecting on life. And sometimes I love to just be in the present. And, you know, I'm looking around and maybe I'll see a dolphin or, you know, other wildlife, and it's just so peaceful. It really is. When it's not blowing a million miles an hour, it's actually really, really peaceful. So.
Yeah, it allows you to, I don't know what I think of particularly, but just like Scout, you don't realize how inundated you are with stimulus, and even when you're in your own house and, you know, by yourself, there's so much going on. But when you're out there in the elements, like, you know, especially in Alaska and there's nobody else around, it's a peaceful feeling that you don't really expect to have, because you don't even know what that's like anymore. Your cell phones don't work, you know, and internet's not there, and you get to a place where it's just wonderful, and we're really fortunate that we're able to have that opportunity. And I think it would be nice if everybody else in the world could, but, you know, so I love it. I love that for that reason.
Yeah, for me, my profession, and I work, I'm a physician assistant in urgent care, and I feel like most of my day is over stimulation, and I'm most looking forward to this race because just the scenery is just so absolutely incredible the whole time. And there's orcas in the water. And then as you get closer to Alaska, there's whales everywhere. And at night, even if you can't see them, you can hear them blowing around you. And I've done so much offshore sailing. It's great. It's like going onto your own little spaceship, and everything you have that you need is just right there. The hot water you need to have a hot drink, the food you need is right there, the people you need are right there, and so many people in life have never ever experienced that. I mean, this is not like being 2,000 miles from land. We'll always be close to land on this particular race, but it's so great to just get away. It's like being, you know, in the middle of the wilderness, and you just only have what you're there, and you can let go. You might have forgot to turn the stove off in your house, but you know, by this time your house is either burned down or not. There is absolutely nothing you can do about it, and so you can just let go of everything. You can't worry about calling somebody or anything. You absolutely have to be right there in the moment. You have no other choice. And I've been lucky enough to experience that a lot in my life with sailing, and it's really cool to have other people come on board that have never experienced that and look at, you know, see through their eyes freshly how it's like you're just in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing you can do about it. You better just be here in the present. And they do go to the present. So it's really cool.
I want to bring it to you one more time. The moment that made me want Sister Ship to take me too.
Just the scenery is just so absolutely incredible the whole time. And there's orcas in the water. And then as you get closer to Alaska, there's whales everywhere. And at night, even if you can't see them, you can hear them blowing around you.
That's a wrap on Women in a Boat, Team Sistership, the fifth episode of We the Village. Don't go away. There's a special treat coming up at the end of this wrap. I promise it's worth hanging out for. Remember how Sistership raised money for scholarships for women and girls in 2016? They're doing it again. Their goal for the 2017 race is to raise $16,000 for scholarships and logistics and expenses. And remember how the team did it in 11 days last year? They have a goal for that, too. They're shooting for 7 days. The race kicks off on June 8, 2017, next Thursday. The start gun is at 5 a.m. You can follow Sistership's progress on their Facebook page, Sistership R2AK. That's R as in race, the number 2, AK as in Alaska. They'll send updates whenever they get a chance, i.e., they can find some cell coverage, and they plan to do some new songs, which I'm excited about. Plus, check them out and follow them on Race Tractor on the R2AK site, r2ak.com. We'll do a follow-up show on their adventure when they get back. Check out Sistership's website, sistership.org, for fun stuff like Women's Dilemma, to pee or not to pee, and so much more awesome stuff about each of these women that I wish I had time to tell you about. Links to all of that and more will be available on our website, wethevillagestories.squarespace.com. Plus, We the Village wants to hear from you. What's your sistership moment? What or who inspired you to believe you could do something you or the world thought you couldn't? What did you do to show the world, or even just yourself, that you can? To be included in the episode that tells your stories about women believing in themselves and inspiring others, go to wethevillagestories.squarespace.com, click on the Get Involved link, and fill out a form using the subject line My Sistership Moment, or record a voice memo and email it to wethevillagestories@gmail.com with a subject line My Sistership Moment. You can subscribe to We the Village on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And yes, that extra, I promise, is still on its way. First, the credits and thank yous. Alana Levy composed and performed the intro and closing music. You also heard a piece by her at the end of the introduction, and snippets of another piece I'm going to talk about in just a minute. The remainder of today's sound was recorded during the Sistership 2016 voyage, including their songs, Just to Show the World We Can, and Row, Row, Row to Alaska. Can't wait to hear more. Our guests today were Captain Michelle Borowski, Johanna Gabbard, and Stephanie Scout Mayhew. They will be joined by crew member Stephanie York next week as they sail from Port Townsend, Washington to Ketchikan, Alaska. Michelle and Johanna, along with Janice Mason and Sherry Smith, were the first all-women's racing team to enter and complete the race to Alaska. Today's show was recorded in the studios of KCSB. Thank you to all, and there are many of them, all of the inspiring women in my life and in the world. Thank you to everyone everywhere who's been told that an aspiration he or she has can't be met because that's just the way it is, or whatever category they fit into doesn't do that and does it anyway. And thank you to those who have paved and continue to pave the way for a more equitable future. And finally, here's that special extra I promised. It's a song that you've heard bits of throughout this episode. It's a brand new original by Village composer Alana Levy. The serendipity of the story that goes with it is just lovely. I asked Alana the other day, it was shortly after I'd recorded this conversation with the gals of Sistership, if she would ever want to kind of reverse order the way we've been doing things. I could send her an interview and then she could kind of compose to it. We've been typically doing it the other way around, where she has these awesome recordings and I kind of pick and choose what I want to use here and there. And she said, yeah, you know, let me think about it. That's interesting. It's a little bit different than what I do, but sure. But for now, can I send you this song that I just finished? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to hear it. And so she sent me this. I'm going to send you out with To the Sea by the magical Alana Levy.
No.